Catch-Up Homes Big Breakfast.
Weekdays from 5:30.
Welcome along to the Catch-Up Podcast, exclusive to the Listener app or wherever you're getting it, not so exclusively. It's Marto and Margo. Very funny show this morning. We're talking about disability.
Oh, thank you, James.
No, it was a funny show.
Can I check something we were just talking about then? Like, it's after 9 o'clock.
Yeah, it is.
Am I giving away some of the magic?
No.
The girl who won the US Open,
Emma
Raducanu.
Nobody knows how to say her last name.
Raducanu.
Raducanu.
Sounds like she was Romanian. Anyway.
Emma Raducanu.
Anyway, how old?
She won the US Open, 19 years old. And she competed. Her main goal was just to win a pair of AirPods. She wanted to win enough money to buy herself some new AirPods.
That's
pretty
brilliant.
Sure you can buy the whole line of Apple now if you wanted to, babe.
That is brilliant.
$2.5 million prize money.
You tell me. What are you looking at her social media?
Checking out her social media.
Daniel Ricciardo. She loves Daniel.
And
she loves him and he loves her.
Like, Red Bull Racing have also commented.
Red Bull? No, he used to be Red Bull. He's now McLaren.
Oh.
Hey, but... He'd be over 30 now, Ricardo, wouldn't he? Is that all right?
Yeah.
If you're over 30, you're allowed to root a teenager.
Yeah, well, she's 19. She's consenting
still
adult.
Long way, a lot of distance. That's 12 years. That's too much. I haven't asked you your ruling on...
Corey and I are 3 and a bit years apart.
Yeah, my wife, Kathy, and I are 4 years apart.
14. I win.
Ooh.
Yeah, you do win.
Yeah, I didn't realise you were going to go down weird.
Well, no, actually, I'll trump you all because my girlfriend is 30 years younger than her boyfriend.
Oh, she's better.
She's 36. He's 65.
Funny show today.
Oh, she's going to get a lot of money soon. That's what it's about, isn't it?
It's you know what? It's a great show. Just listen to it. Here's the Catch-Up
podcast.
Are
you still carrying on about something?
Anything you missed from today's Big Breakfast is in the Catch-Up podcast on the Listener app. Thanks to Chemist Warehouse. Right now, get half price big brand vitamins and cosmetics at Chemist Warehouse. T's and C's apply.
Margo, was it Monday we were talking about those mates of mine? I've got about two of them are close mates, with one eye?
Yes.
And I was telling you about how one bloke...
Well, we're talking about eye injuries.
We're talking about
eye injuries. We're talking about hockey straps. And then yesterday we talked about what did you get hit in the eye with.
Right.
And you were telling us about your mate. You got several mates who only have one eye and a lot of them have glass eyes and that they tap them and then they flick them out and put
into
them in
beers.
People's beer.
And
it's
then,
a bit gross.
Well, from there, and we didn't get to it on radio, but I'd like to now if it's not too inappropriate, but disability pranks...
Oh.
Like when you've got something like a digit missing, or my dad used to do it with his teeth because he had false teeth.
Right.
And he.
I know one of them.
What it does?
Yeah, one of my dad's mate has false teeth and
pretending.
He always like accidentally pops it out mid conversation. And then you go, oh, yuck, that's gross. All it's right. Getting a bit old now, though. He does it all the time.
I'm
like, come on, come up with something new.
No, you can't. When you become an old bloke, you're a one trick pony and if you've got false teeth, you're popping them out like my dad.
Put them in
did.
Your drink and you go to drink your drink and it's
that
in,
get
there.
In there. That's what my mate used to do with his eye. Anyway, it might be inappropriate. But surely you all know another mate of mine lost.
It doesn't have to be a prank though that you do on someone else. It might be just a trick that you do with your prosthetic leg and drink out of it. I don't know.
Did you
shoey.
See at the Paralympics? I used to love that. They'd take their legs off and do special photos with them. Is that a prank? I don't know.
Not Ben Roberts style though.
My mate ran over his big toe. He was mowing in thongs. Ran over. Lost his big toe. He loves putting his feet on tables. Just Jesus! People go, what happened there?
Girl I went to school with lost the top of her finger. Yeah. She used to stick the nub up her nose and pretend like she was picking her nose or in her ear. Or there was the old dad. What was the thumb one? My dad used to do the thumb
off,
where you cut your thumb off you'd like slide it across and it'd look like you're missing half your thumb.
All right. I think we know what, like people with half an arm, like,
there's got to be some fun around that. Sure.
Might just go around tapping people on the shoulder with the prosthetic arm.
Maybe this won't work, but 133353.
And we're not making fun of disabilities.
No way in the world.
We want people who make fun of their own disabilities
by
having a bit of fun about it because, life's too serious.
It is. 133353.
Dale from the Gold Coast, good morning.
Oh, it was my dad. He, when I was sort of 6 or 7, I was sitting on the lounge room with my young brother, and we were just mucking around with some tools, and Dad had a pair of pliers, and he sort of leant over and goes, I'll pinch your nose, and I grabbed him, and I went, I'll grab your teeth, and I put them sort of near his mouth, and as I did it, he flicked his teeth out, and they landed near the pliers, and I dropped the pliers as the teeth fell out. I thought I'd pulled his teeth out.
Traumatised, Dale.
I didn't know.
So that was the first time he showed you he had false teeth.
Then.
What great timing from the old man.
Dale, how traumatised were you?
Oh, my God, I thought I'd ripped his teeth out. I was 7 years old.
Dale, magnificent story, mate.
Incredible.
Have a listen to Dean from Sunny Coast on the burner phone, Margot. We had a babysitter that looked after my brother and I. When we played up, she used to take out her false eye and throw it at us.
What?
I'm keeping an eye on you, style. I'm still seeing you.
Oh, Stuart, God. Stuart.
Who employs a one-eyed babysitter? What happened to the babysitter? Stuart. I need to know everything.
Stuart from Maudsley. Dean from the Sunny Coast, please ring us. I need to know more about that.
Babysitter.
Stuart from Maudsley, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Yeah, good, mate.
Have you got one of these?
Oh, it's not me, but quite some years ago, me and a mate back when doing furniture removal, when you finish for the day, you're dying for a beer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We wandered into a pub in Idgevold, of all places.
Where?
Idgevold.
Oh, Idgevold, righto, yeah.
Yeah.
Central.
We ordered two beers and we sit down and couldn't help but notice up the other end of the bar's an old bloke sitting there whittling away with his pocket knife and a little piece of wood, you know, just trimming it and making whatever he does with his...
Like a movie.
Yeah. And when he knew he had our attention, he just launched the knife into his leg, like stabbed himself on purpose at the top of his leg.
He had a wooden leg, didn't he?
And we just freaked out. And he burst into laughing. He said, yeah, he had a prosthetic leg.
Oh, Jesus.
That's magnificent.
How long did it take you to recover? Jeez, you would have needed the rest of that beer. Jim from Jimboomba, good morning.
Let's make this the last one. Go, Jim, bring us home, mate.
Yeah, how you going, mate?
Yeah, mate.
I actually lost my fingers on my left hand in 2005. Oh,
you said fingers plural. How many, Jim? Do you mind me asking?
All of them except my thumb.
Okay. Why? How?
Can we make this a comp? Can we have one guess each? Is that all right?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm saying power saw, 9 1/4 power saw.
Okay.
I'm saying bitter, resentful ex-wife.
Oh, what? Okay. No, that's Willie. That'd be if you lost your Willie. No, butcher, you should say. What's the answer, Jim?
No, they came off in a metal press.
Oh, bugger. Oh, no, well, bad luck for you. Sorry.
So what do you do, Jim? Do you have a bit of fun with it?
Oh, I do, actually. Well, not so much. Well, you do have fun with it. You make it look like you've got your fingers jammed in car doors and stuff like that. But, you go down and grab your change and you put your change in your left hand and it all just falls on the floor.
Oh, no.
No, I'd rather.
You just forget that you're missing them.
The door thing will do, mate.
Good on you.
You're Triple M.
Wake up with the Big Breakfast. Weekday mornings from 5:30.
104.5 Triple M.
Marto, I must confess, it's been a frustrating couple of weeks. I told you some time ago that we got the new puppy.
The new puppy that day you weren't home and I went to your house to pick something up and the two of them were so happy together, the two dogs, and that's why you got it, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, we lost two dogs and Jagger, our third child, who's 7, there was a big gaping hole in his heart and he constantly was asking after the dogs that had passed on. He was writing little love letters to them. I love you. I miss you. I hope you're safe in heaven. And he was sleeping with a picture of them at night.
Did he know their cause of death?
Yes. The children were very present.
Jamie doesn't know, and probably a lot of listeners don't know. Ran over their own dog.
Yeah, I ran over one of the dogs, and Corey ran over the other one, and the children were present.
Oh, there's a theme.
Both occasions.
There's a theme. And what it did, though, was good for the kids' discipline. You play up.
This is what happens.
We'll see you out the driveway.
However, Buddy wasn't there to witness it. Andy is very well behaved. He bared witness to the dogs tragically passing on. But Buddy, he is new to the Parker household and has taken a liking to the laundry basket because I told you about the socks disappearing. I'm down hundreds of dollars in school socks. You know, the tall, long ones that the boys have to wear. They're not cheap. No. And we've been through a few pairs because we have matching odd ones that none of them are matching and they've all got holes in them. So I talked about it a few weeks ago and I had one of our listeners reached out to me and said, hey, I do dog training. He's a dog handler, like in the police. police with the police dogs. Okay. And he said, I've got this little business on the side, Complete Canine Brisbane, if anyone's interested. And he came out yesterday, Marto. First lesson of puppy training at the Parkers yesterday. And it was a relatively simple thing. Cam, the lovely dog trainer, said, we're just going to put a collar on him. And it's one of those buzz collars, Marto. And he said, watch, go and get some socks and undies. And so there we go, get some socks and undies, throw them out in the yard.
This is how you do it.
And every time he went to approach said sock or pair of knickers, you give him a little tap. It doesn't hurt. He made me hold on to the dog collar as well so I could feel the buzz and know
that. Were you nervous?
Yeah, so nervous. I'm like, no, it's okay. I trust you.
Corey, you do it.
Yeah. put it around his neck. No.
Imagine if every teacher got one for their kids.
This is the thing, Marto. I was quite excited because he handed me over the remote. He said, we're going to put the collar on. Handed me over the remote and there were three buttons and he said, there's a little dial there which goes up to 100, but I only want you to use it at around 20. It's, you know, a low level,
so,
little bars. Just
so tell me.
Because he's a pup. So
while he went over to a sock or a pair of undies.
Press the button and he jumps around like he's doing burnouts and he gets a little bit of a shock. And
not too bad.
It deters him from wanting to go back to the sock. So two buzzes and he was out. He's like, I'm going to go and sit over here and I'm not going anywhere near a sock.
I hate socks.
I have not lost a sock in the last 24 hours.
Oh my God.
Fingers crossed.
Job done.
But the thing that was brought to my attention was that he gave me a remote. And so he's left the buzz collar with us for a couple of days.
The dog doesn't have to wear it around all the time.
Well, he has been for the last 2 days so that he can feel that it's still there. It deters him from going there. If I see him again, I have to press the buzz.
Reset his behaviour.
Reset the behaviour.
Oh, that's good.
So anyway, so he passes me this remote and I'm like, okay. So he shows me there's, and I'm like, well, there's three buttons here. What are the other two buttons for? And they've got letters on them. So P was the one that is programmed for Buddy.
Yeah.
So I said, all right, there's a P, there's an N, and there is a C. Could we just program the C for Corey and just leave me, because this box comes with two collars.
Two collars.
So can you leave me the other collar? Because I don't need it for Andy, and I'll just put it around Corey's neck, and every time he's playing up.
You need a car battery in that thing. Gives you a proper
just
charge.
Give him a little buzz.
Triple M's Big Breakfast with Marto and Margo.
This is Sound of Perks, Bex of Fireworks. I've combined the two. When you hear that later in the show, you call 133353 because you'll get to go and sit in the Rockstar Lounge at Triple M's River Fire. Thanks to Automasters, call 1300 Automasters.
Speaking of fireworks, let's talk about the G-spot, because the existence of the mythical G-spot remains a scientific mystery.
What do you mean?
After a group of Portuguese researchers failed to find any definitive evidence of it.
A group of them?
Yes.
Were they actually scientists or were they just at a pub one night?
They set out to find out whether there was any scientific agreement on what and where and how large the G-spot is in the female genitalia.
What a they get a research grant from the Portuguese government for this? enthusiastic amateurs?
They had wildly different answers, Marto, leading academics to conclude that the G-spot existence remained unapproved.
Unapproved by who?
Them, the Portuguese researchers.
What? Have they just burst out of the lab?
It doesn't give me any details in and around how they tried to find out where the G-spot is
Can I jump in for a second? Because you said I'm going to talk about G-spots here, so I did a bit of Googling. The G-spot,
it was in your history search,
I think everyone knows.
How to find.
The G-spot is a purported highly erogenous area of the vagina. We know that. That when stimulated may lead to strong sexual arousal and orgasm. Although the concept, see these Portuguese, have they only just recently done this? The concept of vaginal orgasm has been around since the 17th century. The term G-spot wasn't coined until the 1980s.
What?
It's been a recent thing. It was named after, imagine having it named after you.
Incredible.
Ernst Grafenberg, a German guy. Gynecologist whose 1940s research documented this sensitive region within the vagina in some women. Hold on. He's a German gyno. During the war, Hitler's trying to fight a war and he's looking
at
him. Come on, mate, switch on. He should have been inventing a nuclear bomb and Germany could have been running the world. And oh, he's looking for the G-spot.
I mean, I don't know what these Portuguese academics were doing, but I mean, I don't have any problem finding the G-spot. I mean, maybe I should say to them, instead of having a boy's look, maybe have a good girl's look, gentlemen.
Motivation.
Triple M's Big Breakfast.
Weekday mornings from 5:30.
briefly go serious on this show. Yesterday in State Parliament, they heralded as a huge day. The voluntary assisted dying bill was being, it started off with the robot, our Deputy Premier, making a little bit of a talk.
The time has come to recognise that Queenslanders who are suffering and dying deserve to have choice and autonomy about their end of life. No one should be forced to die in pain or alone.
Fair enough. I'm in agreement with that. Like, you know, if you want to, you can die. But I got my problems, Margo, with the whole thing.
Mm.
And I'll tell you what it is now. Our hospital system stinks. Our jails, they stink. They're being overrun. Our parole system's being overrun. Our tourism industry's in tatters.
Family law courts are in tatters.
Thank you. And somehow they can devote, they're going to devote not just yesterday, but the next 2 or 3 days to debating the issue of voluntary assisted dying. Now, I'm all for it. Go for your lives. That's what people, you know, if they want to.
People should have the choice.
People should have the choice.
Die with dignity.
Right now ain't the time to be doing it while we're in the middle. I find it slightly ironic that the fact is we've spent 18 months killing young children's lives, okay, just killing off ill opportunities, killing people's businesses. Mental health issues have gone through the roof.
We've been saving our elderly.
Saving old people. Saving old people. It's incredible. That's what we've been doing for 2 years in the whole world, yet now we decide let's start deciding, kill your rallies. That's virtually how I see it. Let's put this to the back burner. I couldn't find anyone sensible to find, you know, anyone to talk to, so I thought I'd find a man who's now, I used to have a lot of respect for when he was our greatest ever Lord Mayor of Brisbane. Premier of Queensland, and now he's on the outside, so I thought he could have a fresh set of eyes. Campbell Newman, welcome to the Big Breakfast.
G'day, Marto, and g'day, Margo, as well. Thanks for having me.
When he said he couldn't find anyone sensible to talk about it, and he used to have a lot of respect for you, I think what he meant to say
I still do. I haven't seen him for a while.
I wondered where the intro was going, guys. I really did.
So do I.
I think what he meant to say was, you know, we obviously are seeing our politicians disagreeing and arguing over this. It's very two-sided. So we needed someone who's objective and from the outside looking in.
Well,
Campbell, what do you see when you see this?
Well, look, firstly, can I just say, I think you're actually making a pretty good point now that you mention it about priorities at the moment. And the priority should be to get us out of this COVID sort of siege mentality. It's time to open up, actually. And I know a lot of people wouldn't agree with me, but it's time to basically get people vaccinated who want to get vaccinated, and then by Christmas, open up the borders, get rid of these QR codes, no vaccine passports.
Oh, you reckon get rid of the QR codes?
Absolutely. Look, we've got to get back to life. I mean, we've got to get back to our normal life, to the Australian way. Sort of running around presenting your papers, albeit electronically, is not what this country's about. I mean, the only protest I've ever been in my life was protesting against the National Identity Card, the so-called Australia Card, back in 1987. Maybe I'm showing my age, but I'm not into us having to be a society where we've got to show something to get into something. Yeah. So I certainly agree with you on that. But in terms of this issue, it's been around for about 2 to 3 years that the government's been considering it. So they put a lot of time and effort in it. I suppose at the end of the day, it's got to be considered. And it is important, I think. I support the voluntary assisted dying legislation because I think we do have to provide an alternative to palliative care for those who really are in a lot of pain and have got an incurable cancer that they will die of very shortly anyway.
Campbell, what is it with our politicians wanting to stand on behalf of our lives? You know, Anastasia's been very strong about keeping Queenslanders safe and we're protecting our people, and now here again a very strong stance on choosing on behalf of other people how they should or shouldn't die. Why is it in their best interest to take our health concerns upon themselves?
Well, let's deal with VAD first, because to be fair to the Premier, this is actually about giving back control. Because at the moment, you know, you could be dying of incurable cancer, you could be in a lot of pain, it could be throughout your body, and legally nobody can actually let you terminate your own life. So this is legislation that's got lots of safeguards. The person has to go through a real process. It's quite bureaucratic, actually, get consultation with different, you know, two doctors. They've got to actually, you know, sign statements saying they're of sound mind and that they want to do this. And then after they've gone through all this, they choose. So it's not about me sort of, you know, getting rid of old auntie May,
yeah,
because I think I've got money coming in the will. There's all safeguards for that.
Of course.
It's about ensuring, though, that people have rights over their own lives. I mean, the government at the moment is essentially, you know, going back to your question, I mean, really what's happening today is the government saying, no, not under any circumstances can you actually make the ultimate decision about yourself. So that's really what the Premier is arguing, and I support her in that. But in terms of the other side of the coin, the whole coronavirus thing, it's completely out of control. I mean, we are working very, very hard to protect people, and that's fine. But now that we've got the vaccine being rolled out, and that anybody who wants it, who's elderly or got health conditions, is pretty much getting the opportunity to have it now, as soon as that's done, we've got to get on with life. We've got to move on, because people die of things all the time, yeah, sadly.
That's right.
But that's life. You know, death follows life. And I look around. I mean, I'm 58. So, you know, my life expectancy is probably, you know, in the mid-80s. So I've now spent almost two years, as has everyone else, locked up. Can't travel overseas and see relatives. Can't go into state and see relatives. Don't know how I can sort of... you know, actually plan for the future. I mean, everyone's in the same boat, but it's just no way to live. This isn't living.
No.
This is an existence, and it's ridiculous. It's got to end, and it's got to end soon.
So the thing is, we've done all this just to... the average age of dying is mid-80s anyway, so I don't know what we've achieved out of the whole thing.
We'll try this. The average life expectancy of an Australian at the moment, if I'm correct, I'm pretty sure this is the right number, 82.6. The average age of people... have died from COVID is 85.
85, yeah.
For people under 50, I think the figure is only 4 in 12,000. That's the death rate for people under 50.
All right, you've been Premier of Queensland. I understand.
Trying to be callous here, but like, you know, when I'm in my, if I get to my mid-80s, frankly, I've had a good innings.
Oh, bloody oath. We all know
and
that.
I think from the very beginning, Campbell, it's something that we've said here and Marto, people need to take accountability for their own lives and their own health at some point. If you have the choices to be able to go and get vaccinated, if you have the, you know, you're at risk, then take accountability for that and protect yourself. Stop worrying about what everybody else is doing and just keep your head down and follow your own path. We've seen...
Absolutely. We've seen
the UK Prime Minister...
If I can just throw in one thing, because I am standing for the Senate for the Liberal Democrats. Whenever it is.
Righto.
But here's one thing we're against. We're against these so-called vaccine passports. And why is it? Because if you've been vaccinated, you can still spread COVID. We know that now. So the argument really falls apart that everyone should, you know, that we should be requiring people to be vaccinated, say, to turn up to the footy or whatever. I mean, I'll put it like this. If I'm sitting in a pub at the bar, I don't care two hoots if the person next to me is vaccinated or unvaccinated if I've got the vaccine already. I've taken accountability for my own.
Beautiful. Yeah.
I don't care. It's like saying oh, to the person next to you on the vehicle, put sunscreen on because I want to be protected. I mean, it's bizarre. It's like get vaccinated because I need to be protected. No, you get vaccinated if you think that that's the right thing for you. That's what we should be advocating. So, for the Queensland Police Service, for example, to say to their police officers, you've got to have the shot, that's a step too far. That's not Australia.
A rare voice of sense. Campbell Newman, lovely to talk to you again. We might do it again soon.
No worries. Thanks a lot for having me.
The Big Breakfast. The Big Breakfast.
Weekdays from 5:30
on Triple M.
Today, tops of 23 degrees. The wind nowhere near as bad as yesterday. It's 13 right now.
Geez, I tell you what, we don't always get everything we want to cover. Yesterday, I wanted to talk about Tim Payne's neck injury and the fact that Pat Cummins could be the first ever fast bowler who's a regular captain of Australia at test level.
Wow.
What a thing that would have been. And you said, what did you say? Tim Payne, which one's he?
Which one is he?
The wicketkeeper captain.
Of course. I heard about him yesterday, Marto, because I heard he's got a bit of an injury. Yeah. And you know, when you're on TV or radio or just even in conversation sometimes, there's a bit of a slip of the tongue. Yeah. You get your words muddled, and I have that happen to me often. But this poor bloke, Tony Armstrong, he had it happen to him yesterday.
Australian skipper Tim Payne is set to undergo neck surgery, but medical staff remain confident that the veteran will be fit for the Ashes. Payne has a bulging disc that has been... That's a funny one.
funny. That's too good. He went on to apologise and said, I'm just going to throw straight to you. You can take over from here.
Do you reckon they could not stop down
and have a bit of a laugh about it.
Do you reckon Tim Payne's got a sense of humour? He's gone onto Twitter and gone, true story, actually. And then some bloke's gone, accidentally took Viagra instead of Panadol.
Triple M's Big Breakfast with Marto and Margo.
Hey, Margo, the burner phone comes in so handy sometimes. Mm. What is it? 0484
101045.
And send us any of your thoughts anytime.
Anytime.
Here's this one from Dave from Burpengary. Thoughts on this one, guys. My 18-year-old daughter just got her license, went on a road trip, got a flat tyre. She had no idea how to change it. Is this something we should be teaching our kids in school? Surely changing tyres and doing a tax return is more important than long division.
Yeah, look, I definitely agree that tax returns and that sort of stuff should be taught in schools. But changing a tyre, isn't that the job of the father? Isn't that his responsibility?
To teach the kids?
Yeah.
I'm of the belief that you can't walk away from your driving test.
Yeah.
You should have to go, right, you seem to be all right on the road. You should have to change the tyre
and most definitely.
Check the water and oil.
Yeah. But I think there's heaps of things that we could be taught in schools that life skills based, like saving, budgeting, like anything finance. Like they don't really do, like we do maths.
I love the tax return one.
Yeah, tax returns, like that finance type stuff, I think is really important. I think people find themselves in really, hard positions with money owing for credit cards. Cards and not being able to get a credit rating.
Cooking's important.
Home ec. Yeah, they do home ec.
They're still doing that?
Yeah, Memphis actually just did subject selection for high school because she's going into high school next year, and food technology is what they call it these days because it's also, they incorporate an element of science in it. So it's all about how to preserve food, genetically modified
foods. What about growing vegetables? Some schools do it and other schools don't.
Gardening, yeah, we've got gardening. They've got herb gardens and they've got fruit. Orchards.
Oh, righto.
Yeah, they do composting and all that sort of stuff. But life skills stuff, like who needs algebra?
What about animal husbandry?
What does that mean?
Well, we're looking after animals, like delivering cows.
Okay.
Should we do that at school?
Maybe there's an agricultural section that does. All right, I don't know.
Maybe we should ask everyone else. 133353. I'm sure you've thought about it. What should they be teaching at our schools?
I mean, I didn't even grasp English that they did teach. So
you don't need to tell anyone that. It's obvious. Trish from Ascot on the burner phone. They should be teaching kids to look after their personal finances and how to budget appropriately.
So many people find themselves stuck.
I wish I had that when I was a kid too. I had no idea.
Yeah. Adam from Ipswich also texts in saying manners and respect should be taught in school. Ooh. Is that not something that we teach in the home though?
You'd hope so. That's where you get it.
It should be reinforced at school, but it definitely should be something that we teach our children at home. Peter from Mansfield, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
Yeah, good. 133353, things that kids should be learning at school, life, basic life lessons. What do you think should be added to the curriculum?
Well, definitely budgeting. Make them realise that you've got to put food on the table and pay your bills before you go out partying and waste your money and then end up in trouble.
Mm. And we were only just talking about that before with, kids going out and getting jobs and being resilient and self-entitled almost. You know, there's so many parents that are letting their kids live at home because it's so expensive out there and there's uni and this and that, but they're not learning how to, financially cater for themselves because instead of paying mum and dad $100 worth of rent, they're going out and spending it on the drink. Not all kids. That's a very big generalisation, but a lot of them.
Can I, Peter, run this one by you? What about grabbing all the boys as they get into grade 11 maybe and taking them to a pokey lounge and teaching them how to play the pokies prop? No, this is one of the problems. They get to 18 and they all get a Ladbrokes or a sports bet app. Nice. Teach them how to bet properly instead of wasting their bloody money.
Gamble responsibly. Peter.
Don't encourage him. No. I lost my business because of a thieving woman in the office who put it all down East Leeds Club's pokies.
Okay, well, the girls can come and do it as well then. Sorry to make it so sexist.
Catherine from Albany.
Come on, let's get down to the pokies. Get out of the doser.
Catherine. Don't indulge yes. his nonsensical behaviour.
It is not. We're looking for practical
Catherine,
tips.
You're a teacher, yes?
I am,
okay,
yes.
Tell us. What. I mean, we've got English, maths. My daughter's in the process at the moment. She's moving into high school next year, grade 7. She's doing subject selection. And, of course, there are those core subjects, English, math, science, geography, yes, history, etc. What are some of the other things that, you know, maybe our schools should be teaching them?
So, Margot, I was really happy to hear you say before that respect should be being taught in the home and being followed up at school.
Yeah.
But if you actually look at the curriculum, agriculture is taught from the ages of prep, where food is coming from, where animals, animal husbandry, Mardo, is definitely part of the curriculum.
Already, right.
Even things like budgeting, if you've got a teacher who realises that life skills are important, like yep. I teach my year fours how to budget, because you can find ways to build it into the curriculum. So I think what we need to be seeing is parents taking responsibility for some really key skills, and maybe even having that conversation with the school saying, hey, look, we've really noticed this is an issue in our particular area. Do you think there's a way that could be built in? Rather than it being a parent's responsibility or school's responsibility, we are a community. Children have grown up and
work together.
Mature together. Exactly.
Where have you come from? We don't have many listeners like
what
you.
What school are you teaching at, Catherine?
You're
send
amazing.
Your kids to Catherine at Albany
yeah.
Creek.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm teaching in Hendra. And look, I absolutely love what we do there. It's a fabulous school in regards to we look at the curriculum and see the skills the kids need.
Catherine, can I get you at, what do you call your lunchroom? The teacher's common room?
The tea room, the green room.
The teacher's common
room.
Can you just run my pokies idea by them, though? Just see what they think.
Stop it. Can I ask a serious question, Catherine?
No, but that's how they learn about math. Like remember the Catholic priests when they used to teach the kids? They'd always teach them about betting.
Yeah.
Look, Marto, we're near the racetrack, so we can 100% fit that into the curriculum.
The heavens are aligning.
Catherine, I did notice, though, they were talking about NAPLAN obviously moving to online. Queensland, we are, sorry to put it this way, the dumbest state. We are so very far behind New South Wales and Victoria.
Are we really?
Is our education system here in Queensland failing our kids?
What does it come down to?
Okay. All right. So there are two aspects to that. With the NAPLAN curriculum moving to online, we're actually looking at the digital skills of our learners. So I'm a bit of a unique case because my degree was in learning management, and so it was actually about facilitating the learners. So I'm very fortunate that my understanding of digital skills is that it is a lifelong skill that they need to have.
I know.
Whereas we have a lot of teachers in our system who are new to digital skills. So I would say, having a look at the figures, and I have looked at the figures, digital skills is really important. And then we do have a very laissez-faire attitude towards learning. So that comes with the Queensland lifestyle. Mm. So I do think that, I don't think it's that we're failing our learners. I think it's that we're taking a bit of a soft attitude towards it. And I think, if we can build
it'll
up
be
those
fine.
Skills. I think we'll get there eventually. We are seeing improvement. You know, it definitely has improved between this year and last year. So we will get there.
Nice one,
I know,
Catherine.
This has been a long chat. I feel like I want to talk to Catherine more because I want to know how COVID and this pandemic, the lockdowns, the online learning has affected our kids. And they're saying that, you know, the last 2 years, our kids haven't had a proper education and how that's going to affect them in the future.
Just ask, will our kids end up being smarter than Victorian and New South Wales kids?
But do you know what? Our kids have shown such resilience. I teach early years and I also teach at a university level. And our early years children have shown more resilience than our uni students.
Wow.
And I know. Look, it's been shocking for me too. but they're learning those skills from such a young age now that it's having an impact on their learning throughout. So, you know, we have been very fortunate in Queensland with COVID and with lockdowns. And again, that comes down to our chilled attitude. And it really is just about building resilience.
I think we can
Catherine,
make the award.
Incredible.
2021's most intelligent
Breakfast caller.
Yeah.
Triple M's Big Breakfast.
Weekday mornings from 5:30.
Call us anytime, 1-333-53. Shane from, where was Shane from? Oh, we
the
just called him.
The guy.
Cornice guy. He couldn't find any workers at 5 or 10 to 6 this morning. And then we had a welter of people coming in. Ken from Hire for Hire said, I can't find technicians and mechanics.
Yeah.
So, and then we had who else?
It seems to be on both sides of the fence, Marto. Truck drivers, roofers, painters, plumbers, mechanics. We had people ring in to say that their children can't find jobs, they can't find jobs, that they're looking for people, that they can't fill jobs. We had a slew of them ring.
Yeah, look, we've been advertising on Seek for probably 8 or 10 months. We're not having any luck, not even getting some applicants at all. We just can't get anyone to apply for a job.
I've been looking for just anybody, really. You know, you don't need any skills at all, just to have a job. And, yeah, you're just not willing to work for the money.
Mate, we're an air conditioning, plumbing and electrical company, and we're struggling to get an air conditioning apprentice and a plumber.
There are a few theories about it going, oh, well.
Tradespeople coming through from
kids
school.
Kids don't want to work. And then people said, yeah, the apprentices these days aren't worth it because they've done 1 year at year's equivalent at TAFE, and then they get employed and they think they're better than that. Anyway, we've got an expert to actually, maybe he can tell us why these employers can't find anyone. Graham Wynn, we're calling you an employment expert. I hope that's all right, from Superior People Recruitment. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, and that's a great name to give me. Thank you.
Yes, well, our employment expert, you heard some of our callers, and we've told you about the others. Why? Why can't we get anyone? Is it job seeker? I thought that was all over.
Look, it's a problem we've had for a while now, even going back to pre-COVID, a shortage of tradespeople. We've masked it a little bit by the fact we've brought people in from overseas on visas, and that's who filled a lot of these vacancies. But as soon as COVID hit, we shut the borders and stop people coming in. Therefore, we couldn't find those people. There's been a shortage of local people wanting to do trades for many, many years now, but it's been hidden by the fact we've had overseas workers. That stopped. Now there's no local people. The genuine reason why people don't want to do trades is because they want that instant gratification. They want big dollars straight away. They come out of school, they want high-paying jobs. Trades does not give that. They've got 3 or 4 years apprenticeships to do. It's low money, it's dirty work.
Yep.
They just don't want to do it. They want that quick, instant money. Every second person now does a marketing degree of some description. So trades is a real dying trade, for want of a better expression. The young people just don't want to do it. It's hard work. It's low money. The rewards, though, are enormous if they see it out.
There's so many
rewards.
Graham, my son finished his carpentry apprenticeship 2 weeks ago, just turned 22 yesterday. He started on Monday as a proper tradesman and loving it because they turn around each day and they go, oh, look what I did. They actually did something.
Yep. And that's the problem we have now with most people wanting, as I say, instant gratification, and trades do not supply that for you. It's hard work. I mean, when you start as carpenters, for instance, the first thing you start doing is sweeping the sawdust off the floor or filling glue bottles.
Kids don't want to start at the bottom. I mean,
they don't.
We were only just talking about this last week. We were talking about participation awards for kids, and I was on the wrong side of the fence, part of the minority, who said that we're not building resilience in our children. We're just giving them and handing them things on a platter for mediocrity.
So you're saying that's translated out of the workforce.
Does that stem from our parenting? Like, is this our fault that our kids are like this? Or is this a generational thing? Is it a tech thing? Because, you know, we know that social media is a big way for kids to make money these days. They're influencing. They're getting paid to promote products. What is the catalyst in the fact that our kids are lazy and they don't want to work?
It's a combination of all those things. A lot of people want this IT because it's a great paying job and it's quick and it's something they enjoy doing. There is also, as you say, parenting. The kids get whatever they want these days and don't have to work for it. I mean, how many kids living at home still pay rent and board? Very few, I would think. Whereas when I was young, that's what you did.
Yep.
My first 12 months of work, I gave my salary to my parents and they gave me pocket money still to get me used to handling money. That would never happen these days. So it's very, very different how parents are with children, definitely. And as you say, this participation awards is a farce. I had a young girl last week wanting a job and she said, I only want to work 4 days a week. I said, any particular reason why? She said, well, I have big weekends, so the extra day from Friday would give me a chance to get ready for the weekend.
Oh, Jesus. Graham, if you were running the show, and I've watched the government over the last few years trying to encourage employers to put apprentices on, et cetera, what would you do? You're at the coalface.
Yeah, what's the solution?
Look, we need to have definitely more trade schools. That's number one. I think number two, the people on unemployment benefits, and the money has increased, which helps them stay unemployed for quite a bit longer.
Yeah.
They have to apply for instance, 20 jobs per month. There's no checks and balances on what jobs they're applying for. I'll get the same person send their resume for 20 different jobs I'm applying for, none of which they're suited to, okay. But that ticks the box, they get their benefits.
And the other thing
so
is
has to be here.
That they're doing is they're applying for jobs, and then when the employer rings them to say, hey, you know, come in for an interview, they're like, oh, I've already found something, because they know that they don't have to commit to the interview. Is that correct, Rayum?
That is correct.
Yeah.
We would get people, I would say 25 to 30% don't even turn up for interviews.
No.
That sort of volume, it's too high. And I've even had resumes from people, and just on the cover letter, it would simply say, I'm not looking for work, but have to apply for work to get my benefits. Apology for wasting your time. That's what it says. No, I like their honesty.
Yeah, but, of course. But still, this is the attitude that
we're
dealing with.
We're not going to change it either.
No, nothing's going to change.
And if you're an employer, you can't afford to pay apprentices too much, because I know myself, I've put through four apprentices. The first 2 years... They're draining the company because they're actually draining money. But third and fourth, you're making money off them. I don't know how we fix that system.
It's not an overnight fix, this one. As I say, the fact we've had the overseas workers coming in has hidden the fact we've got this problem of lack of tradesmen.
Yeah.
But we've stopped that, and so now it's highlighted the problem. There is a real shortage. And as you say, apprenticeships are 3 to 4 years. This is not an overnight fix.
Right. Graham, thank you very much. Hopefully someone's listening. And I tell you what, we've had a lot of applications from people going, I do want to work. We're going to run that at about 8:30 this morning, putting together. So if you're a mum or a dad and you're going, my kid needs a job, you'd be well served to ring us right now, 133353. Thank you, Graham Wynn from Superior People Recruitment.
It's the end of the podcast. What do you know? So tune in tomorrow and catch the show.
Triple M.